We now have the pleasure of introducing our next speaker, which is Yusuf. Yusuf works for the SAS Institute and has a computer systems engineering background, so I would love to hear his thoughts on my presentation around professionalism. And Yusuf will be touching on telcos and the convergence and opportunities that it brings for us. Thank you so much, Yusuf.
Thank you, Ashley, for the introduction. And I'm Yusuf. I work for a company called SAS Institute, a software company. I'm sure actuaries and statisticians know SAS better than what I do. My discussion or my presentation is based on my work as an account executive in the for a telco over the past few years. And to answer Ashley's question about do data scientists and actuaries have a job in the future, yes, you do. A lot depends on what you guys can do and perspective. I've chosen my theme, and I've kind of linked it into neurons, synapses, and the brain. But that's the only time I'm going to be mentioning neurons, synapses, and the brain. And the reason why I've made this correlation or this link is because the telecommunications network, the global telecommunications network, functions the way that a new the nerve system inside of your body works, connected to a brain, where your brain is the central data source or the big data environment. The GSM network, as we know, started out with voice, mobile, and text messages. And what we've seen over the past significant latter part over the past 10 to 12 years is the decline in voice and the increase in data. So technology, and specifically the smartphone itself, has allowed people to interface with data more easily. Which means the reason why mobile telecommunications came about was to deliver the ability for you to talk on a phone without being cabled, has moved away, and we moved into the era of the internet. With the growth of the internet, what we've seen is that, and this is the International Telecommunications Union, they've released figures that at least 96% of the global population is somehow close to cell phone towers or to have access to access to the internet. By the end of last year, more than half of the population of the world is connected to the internet. That's almost 4 billion people, with the largest uptake in Africa, where Africa is a little bit strange, where almost 15 years ago, there were only 2.1% of the entire continent connected to the internet. Right now we have 24.4% of the population connected to the internet. That's significant. So we've seen a significant investment in government as well as private telco companies in ensuring that the planet or the continent is connected. But this has given access to so much more than just communications. It's allowed access to other services. So one of the interesting facts that I read is that people receive better cell phone coverage than they do health coverage in Africa. But therein is the opportunity, right? If you have someone who has access to you through the internet, you are able to give them more services. So hopefully through the next few slides you'll be able to understand how I'm linking it all together. An area where telecommunications companies have provided a lot of benefit to the world, and you may not have realized it, is in offering cloud services. So they've got a networks terminate at the telco. So they've been able to give you a data center. So small companies, instead of investing in infrastructure and in hardware and services, are able to rent services from telecommunications companies. And these have been very traditional services. So the services they offer would be security, so antivirus, firewalls, But they'll also be able to give you, which was the first, I don't know if any of you remember BlackBerry, that was the first convergence of the telco. So it was the ability to lift where your email sits and have it available to you anywhere. From the movement into telco has been what I would like to think one of the largest disruptors over the past, well actually it's not a disruptor, it's an evolution of the network into the fifth generation. This is probably going to be an area where a lot of telcos are going to be spending a lot of their capex over the next few years. And it's while they hybrid from 3G, 4G into 5G. So we've had, just to repeat my earlier slides, it was the first convergence of moving data, moving your mobile phone from voice and text into the internet. It was the convergence of the internet into a data center where telcos were able to give services, so as a service offerings. And now the next part, which is 5G, kind of takes the network and blows it up significantly. It allows for multiple services to be tiered across a singular pipe and allows access to information and services. You will note that the investment is going to be substantial. It is estimated that $2.7 trillion will be spent by next year on 5G. I'm not here to talk about policies in China and Huawei and the US. But I want everyone in the room to understand the investment from a technical perspective that needs to happen. One of the other reasons why 5G has not rolled out as fast as it should have is because there's a lot of unknowns. One of the unknowns is an impact to our health. 5G has low frequency and has got certain restrictions, meaning it cannot traverse between concrete walls or even people. So we need to understand what the frequency impact would be on the human itself, especially if we're going to have a deluge of antennas in built-up areas. Consider Sandton, which would probably have one of the highest 5G throughputs if we had to look at it statistically. What that would mean is that most of us would have radiation dripping off us. No, we won't have radiation. Glad people are joking. So if we had to compare what 4G and 5G means to us, 5G, it has certain challenges that I mentioned, the challenges that industry would need to understand, but it also has challenges that government would need to allow for. The spectrum that 5G uses is quite varied, so we need to allocate how we slice the spectrum for different industries. For instance, how would a hospital chain use 5G more effectively to connect all of their internet devices? What you wouldn't want is your media company streaming massive amounts of sports or Olympics or whatever the case may be and use the same frequency or the slice that a hospital chain would do. You'd have a goal and then you'd have a heart attack. Bad jokes, sorry. We all know what the use cases of 5G would be because there's been a lot of marketing around it. So it's focused on the healthcare sector, focused on education, focused on consumer, focused on retail. But like I said before, there still needs to be a standardization. Right now, even the European Union has not understood what the standardization for 5G would be and how we would be able to slice networks or separate various industries. It also brings up important questions around net neutrality, so the involvement of governments in information. Ashley spoke earlier about the protection of information and data governance. Again, this is one of the areas where I believe if every device is connected to the internet, that means every device is vulnerable to some sort of hack, regardless of regardless of the security around it. So we need to understand that if we are going to be moving to this IoT world, we need to have certain restrictions and controls around it, especially from a security point of view. I would assume that my audience is made up with a lot of representatives from financial institutions. The next convergence that the mobile operator has delved into, so the convergence of industry, is in financial services. So financial services, the telcos were offering the ability to do payments and transfers across the planet faster than what any bank would have done. So it's kind of moving a cell in one spreadsheet and moving it to another cell in another spreadsheet. So what that was is taking time from your airtime, so a dollar-based value, and moving it across and shifting it to someone else. Right? So that was the first convergence that they did. But you'll notice the market potential for it, so specifically in Africa. The use of mobile phones, and specifically for financial services on top of mobile phones, has given access to the continent of Africa, where we've got African problems. So people in cities, migrant workers that needed to move funds to family members in rural areas. Last year alone, there was about $1.3 billion transacted across mobile phones, and that's peer-to-peer transfers, e-wallet transfers, which is significant. So banks always talk about getting the unbanked. It's not about getting the unbanked. It's about giving services, financial services, to those that traditionally did not have it. And I'd like to pause there and just consider a point. Would we need financial services in the future? And when I say, I don't mean the super rich or us having banks or investments or anything like that. But if you had to look at the way that a country would need to develop itself, by giving access for people to move and control their money is the first power that you can hand over to someone, which means they're in control of their funds and are able to do with it what they please. One of the other interesting statistics about mobile money is that there are more registered accounts on mobile operators and e-wallets than there are on account holders and traditional banks in Africa. And it goes to, I don't know if any of you have traveled up into other upper African countries, but a tradition is to have more than one cell phone with more than one operator that you're connected to. So I'm not saying that there's 300 million people out there that have mobile wallets, but at least a significant portion of those have multiple wallets across multiple telco operators. The service is expanding. So Rogers, I spoke about the African problem, but Rogers is a Canadian telco, and they've been offering mobile wallet and mobile transfers as well. In fact, the business model that they developed it on was the one that Vodacom and M-Pesa built in Kenya in the 2000s. But now what they're doing is they're offering credit cards, actual plastic and digital credit cards on your mobile device. So this separation of the bank and credit card companies from where your finance is not just a problem for developing countries to solve, but it's something that developed countries are looking at and seeing other revenue potential for them. So a telco is going to be offering credit. Where they're going to be basing what the value is, that's up for them to decide. In Africa, we should be proud that we've got organizations like MTN. Where MTN have been launching financial service products beyond payments and wallets. So what they've been doing is they've been offering life insurance and insurance policies, so they partner with insurance companies, and they are offering, as part of your airtime package, a percentage of that goes to a premium to a life or a healthcare premium. So MTN Uganda has piloted a healthcare facility where you go out and you buy airtime. Of that airtime, a percentage goes towards a healthcare facility, so I could be able to cash in and go to a hospital and get medication or even just to see a doctor. But then there's a big bad blue boy in the room, Mr. Zuckerberg and his cryptocurrency on Facebook. So that's a currency on a social page where I can purchase things. And it kind of takes the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency conversation and pushes it into the virtual stratosphere. There was that game a couple of years ago, virtual world or whatever it was called, where they had e-money, where they could go out and purchase things. And what was happening is people take real money and pump it into a game and then buy fake things and they thought they were rich. And now it's kind of the other way around, where you could go out and you can go into a social media platform and I could do a transaction with someone. So if you were renting a flat, I could have Facebook bucks and I'd pay you that way. So there's the buy-in factor. How do you exchange a dollar to whatever Facebook Zuckerdollar, whatever you want to call it is. But these are the other complexities that are going to arise, right? If the Facebook lira is going to become a currency, how do we control governance around that? How do we also ensure that we don't, that El Chapo isn't using it to launder his money? So there's other controls and regulatory aspects that we need to look into it. When mobile companies or software companies are going to be launching cryptocurrencies. OTT stands for over-the-top services, and media companies are Time Warner, SABC, Warner Brothers, and Netflix. So we talk about how Netflix killed the video cassette. There's quite a lot of young people in here. Video cassette was a press play. So Netflix didn't just start by, boom, we're on the internet. You would rent your DVD by going onto the online portal, and it would get delivered to you. You'd watch it. You'd have it for 3 to 5 days, depending on whatever subscription you had. And then you'd drop it off in a red box, and then they'd collect it and recycle it. Afterwards, they merged or got the shared technology from telco operators, used their data center. So remember a couple of slides back, I spoke about cloud. They used the cloud, and they started offering streaming services. So they would partner with the telco and say, we've got the streaming service where we are going to be streaming videos. We obviously would like to guarantee our customers that have a better throughput so they could watch these movies. But what Netflix has done is they've continued to improve on their business model. Where they were streaming video, they now moved into content creation and content delivery. So it's not just about streaming anymore, but if you want to be that pivot point or you want to be the central point where everyone's going to connect to you, you need to be able to give them something. So content is key. Connectivity makes content available to everybody. So I hope you can see the correlation between content and the telco provider. One of the largest mergers happened about 18 months ago, or just over 18 months ago, which was AT&T, the largest telco operator in the U.S., merging with Time Warner. And Time Warner owns all of these brands, so that's CNN, HBO. But Time Warner is not as successful as they thought it would be, because Time Warner came out, AT&T came up with this specific target, which is Netflix. We've got Netflix in our sites, and if we bring a production company into our place, then all of a sudden we are the content creator and content distributor. But that's not what happened. You cannot have a telco mindset when you take over a media company. So you still need to let the media company operate like a media company. They need to understand how to build content and distribute it. All you are is a pipe where they can access all the information. So right now it's not reaping the revenue that they thought they would, but I would anticipate that this would improve significantly over the next 2 years at least. Digital and IoT. I'm gonna pause right here, and I just want to explain what a lot of organizations and perhaps the companies that you work for talk about. How are we going to digitize our organization? As an old man, when we came out, digitization was moving everything onto a web page, and that was, hey, now we've got a web page. The next phase of that or the next cycle was having access via your mobile phone. But the internet has changed so much, right? Not only has it changed in the way that we communicate with each other, but it also changed the way that organizations communicate with their customers, broadly speaking. So the next few slides are going to break out, and I'm going to spend just a little bit of time on each one as it blows up. So cloud, 5G, and now IoT. So the Internet of Things still requires that neural network for information to be passed across between multiple devices and organizations, right? So if we have to focus on the Internet of Things, specifically, well, on this slide here for smart cities and smart homes, I have the ability to connect devices, which means I can be away from home, but I can still dial into my video camera at home. I can turn on my oven. I can change the temperature of my fridge. I can operate my lights, whatever the case may be. The telco is a significant component of that ecosystem. It's also a significant ecosystem in the way that we communicate with our customers. So as corporate entities like yourselves need to communicate with your customers, and this is the bad part of a telco, no one has as much data about you than your telco operator, your mobile operator. So what happens is they have information about you, and they are able to share it with corporate entities, and from there you are able to get a better experience or able to deliver better experience to your end consumer. But it's also the components or the devices that a consumer would buy that allows them to have a better connected experience. I think it'll make a bit more sense if I talk about the manufacturing later on. So IoT, one of the use cases specifically from smart cities kind of linked on to surveillance is how we use video analytics and image recognition to understand what a situation or what kind of situation is happening. So one of the use cases that we've developed and we've tried to speak to our local government about it is the smart cameras that are already on the I don't know if you guys seen the art installations across the highway. They're called ETLs, and they have light blue lights. So they've got thanks for laughing. They've got very sophisticated cameras that aren't doing much. All they're doing at the moment is taking photos. But we could do so much with it, right? If I had to look, use an example, and it's unfortunately an example that a lot of South Africans are used to. Cash in transit heists are a reality. But what we are able to do using the smart cameras on top of ETOLs and also the throughput of traffic in congested areas like Sandton, we'll be able to manipulate traffic to ensure that when a cash delivery vehicle is traveling, it's traveling in a secure path where there are always police vehicles or security companies in the area that are able to respond should anything go down. So these are real-world scenarios and use cases where devices, in devices that are connected, where there's big data, where there's subject matter experts such as yourselves that are able to put cognitive capability on top of it, have scenarios play out that could benefit the lives and, in fact, maybe even save lives. On the manufacturing industry, on manufacturing, for me, this is it's a personal thing, right? So for decades, we're using scary equipment to understand the quality of products that we're developing. So we would have scary equipment, lasers that would go out and check whether a bottle is screwed on properly. We'd be able to understand what the throughput on a production line would be and how it would impact supply chain, right? So on my demand side coming from my customers, but also on my production side, on the raw material that needs to go out to meet that demand. IoT, if we had to lift up and look at the manufacturing process on a macro scale, understanding what raw material is and what an end product would be means that we are able to determine what our profitability is on an end product potential is. So there's if we had to look at data like this, we understand that we can use data in more advanced ways than what we traditionally are used to doing. We understand the retail one actually gave a very nice experience. So one of the use cases that IBM has used to have with Macy's in the States was You'd walk into a Macy's store in New York, for example. They'd encourage you to turn on Bluetooth. Once you have your Bluetooth activated, they'll be able to understand where you are in the store. If I'm walking past the Levi's section, it will push an offer to me and say, Levi's are on sale for, 15%. In my scenario, I take the Levi's and walk towards to the point of sale. When they scan my point of sale, they'll see that I've taken the promotion on Levi's and will give me another promotion. And if you come back in the next 2 days, you'll be able to get a discount on your next T-shirt. Or if you want to purchase something else now, we'll give you a 75% voucher or whatever the case may be. So that's an intrusive, yes, but it's also a helpful way of using data and analytics. Healthcare and education, right? I think it's important for us as South Africans to ensure that the way that we use technology, specifically the telco network, IoT devices that sit on top of it, is to benefit those around us, right? There are a lot of use cases. In fact, in Mobile World Conference in February earlier this year, there was an operation that was completed via remote. Well, it wasn't remote, but what was happening is a surgeon was sitting in Barcelona and the patient and was in theater in Sweden. And on stage, the surgeon in Barcelona was making incisions and it was being acted out real time on the patient in Sweden. So we are able to deliver healthcare on top of a network in areas that we wouldn't been able to get to before. So consider an outbreak of cholera or any disease in a rural area. If they have access to the internet, we could have surgeons on the background that would be able to do a diagnosis over the air. And I think that's the value that I'm most interested in seeing. So how does it all stitch together, right? So these are the neurons that I spoke about. And the telco is not just a dumb pipe where it takes all of this information and puts it in a house somewhere so geniuses like yourselves can operate on it. What we want is to give access to the information to everyone. And neurons eventually connect to a big brain. And I'd like to end off by saying I anticipate that the data science community would be able to be the big brain that would be able to leverage the telco network as well as the big data that the telco allows you to have access to. Thank you. There's only two question marks, so that's two questions.
Thank you for a great presentation. Also, a nice way to think of those gantries for the future. I'm definitely going to hold on to that one. Just thinking about your example of people sitting with multiple phones and multiple wallets, that's not a great customer experience. And if I think about how Netflix got started, it was because the founder of Netflix was really annoyed at the fact people, he personally had to pay late fees.
Yeah, $10.
Yeah. Yeah, and that whole thing around does it work for the customer, does it work for the customer, is, you know, it's got to be central to organizations that want to succeed. And what I'm thinking is, and what I'm wondering about is, if you have a telco that is so intrinsically linked with all of its financial services, one, is it a good customer experience? Because now you have to have multiple wallets, and I only have one in my pocket. I don't naturally want to carry two. But at the same time, are the regulators and competition authorities going to start to intervene at some point? Because they say, you are too vertically integrated on something that is too critical, and we're going to break you up. Is that something which, I don't know, it's not data science specifically, but
no.
Just looking at how does this all play out?
Just on that fact, it's the multiple phones per person is across multiple networks, so they'd have In Nigeria, for instance, they would have an MTN and an Etisalat phone and an Airtel phone. So there would be across three different mobile operators. Regulators, governance, and government, unfortunately. That's where the control mechanisms would need to come from. If I could perhaps have a statement, and the statement would be that maybe the way that banking traditionally works is not suitable for banking in Africa. And I think that's, if our perspective is that we want to give access to financial or bring those that are financially excluded into the ecosystem, we cannot dictate to them the parameters in which they need to operate in. The only reason, however many years ago, opened up a bank account is because no one wanted to pay me in cash. Right? So it had to go via a bank. And I think it's the regulatory, the banking industry that needs to create those controls. But I don't think that banks should do it on their own. And I think they should be including telcos, because it's a channel that banks... Standard Bank a couple of years ago tried to launch mobile banking with a partnership with MTN, and it failed. And so did Vodacom fail in bringing M-Pesa into South Africa, because they still had the mindset of a traditional bank, not the mindset of the community that we're trying to get involved is not our traditional investors. It's people that don't want to spend 20 rand moving 50 bucks across. Right, so the cost of movement, cost of moving money needed to decrease, and I think that's the control mechanisms that need to put in place.
Are there any other questions? So while you guys are thinking about that, the question I would have is specifically around the testing around radiation based on 5G. Do you have any further insights on that? Given that I live close to Sandton, it's a concern.
I have an article, actually, and I shall mail you the link to that article. But a German healthcare organization has done significant studies on what the MIMO antenna radiation would do. So it's the frequency that 5G would operate in may not be radiation, but it has interference, and interference could be anything from eyesight, so affecting your eyesight in bright light, all the way through to impacting pacemakers. But it's not conclusive, right? Because in order for you to test it, you need to actually have 5G antennas, and they're not cheap.
So, I mean,
but I will mail you the article.
Thank you. Because, I mean, if you think about the increase in oncology claims that is occurring already in South Africa, and I think there's been continuous concern around that. For the broader population, that would be something that they're concerned about, but also then long-term exposure would be something that as citizens we would need to understand.
I don't mean to be funny in my response, but it is a joke. I would see that we need to have a happy medium on the way that we adopt technology and the way that we move into our traditional way of living. So the human does not need a phone to live, right? The human needs access to basic amenities, so food, water, living space, security. We need to find that happy medium. And I think that when it comes to new technology, specifically 5G, it's again, telcos need to be a little bit more open in the way that they're testing technology. And they should not be doing it in isolation and then marketing it afterwards and what the benefit would be. I think what they should be doing is allowing the open community, so citizens, should be aware of what they're doing. And we should be able to track the way that they're going to be deploying new technologies. That's big data, right? Open big data governance. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for a very interesting presentation. I really appreciate your time. I found it very insightful, and hopefully we will be able to find a balance between creating social good through the use of these technologies, creating access to education, social security benefits, banking the unbanked, but then of course ensuring that we don't try and fit a very rigid regime to try and apply that for a situation that doesn't exist. So again, going back to the Netflix example, a specific problem was tried to be solved, and within that a solution was derived. So I see a lot of interesting work for us going forward, and hopefully we can ensure that we don't have to start wearing gamma ray suits in the future. Thank you so much.